We're going to talk about our next case, pretty interesting situation that Dr. Bill Harwin is going to present. This is actually a 60-year-old man with a really interesting history of a pancreatic neuroendocrine tumor. It was first metastatic, diagnosed in 1997. He's been through all kinds of therapies. He went over to Europe to get therapies, got radioactive therapy. And I think it was actually while he was getting chemotherapy, I believe the temozolomide and capecitabine, that he was found to have an elevated white count. He sent the patient to a tertiary center, and at that center he was given the diagnosis of CMML and was started on azacitidine, had a response, and the patient is doing well. But here's Dr. Harwin and the patient.
I know him a little bit outside of the office. I live in a golf and yachting community, and I actually don't golf and I don't really boat very much, but he occasionally shows up there because he works as a boat captain. So I've seen him there a few times because he's friends of members there. So I run into him socially. He's very soft-spoken. I would describe him as a real gentleman. And he has maintained a very active lifestyle throughout his disease, which goes back to 1997. So he's always remained an active lifestyle.
When you first evaluated him, what were you thinking?
I looked at the smear, and he looked to me like someone who had chronic myelocytic leukemia. And when his FISH test for bisCerebral came back negative, that's when I sent him to Moffitt. But he clearly had increased blasts. But what's interesting to me is that the doctor at Moffitt felt he was most consistent with chronic myelomonocytic leukemia, but he never really had a big monocytosis. And I was wondering how one definitively makes the diagnosis of CMML. Is it just based on a significantly elevated white count with increased blasts? Does the cytogenetics give any information? It wasn't obvious to me that he had CMML, but if he didn't have CML, there was nothing else that really fitted exactly.
Any questions for the faculty?
Well, what question I have is, I'd be interested to know if the experts know of any specific data on using 5-azacitidine in CMML or unusual variants of MDS.
So, Doug, any thoughts about this really unusual, strange case?
Well, I actually have a similar case, very interestingly, with a peanut, same type of neuroendocrine tumor, and has a different type of MDS thought related to therapy. So one question sort of comes to mind is the role of the previous therapy in the patient's bone marrow disorder. The second thing is that I think we do have a challenge in offering real diagnoses to some of the proliferative disorders, and certainly the myeloproliferative, the overlap with the myelodysplastic syndromes. Those diseases are hard to sometimes give a name to. So I think that's part of the challenge in treating patients like this, where you can't give them an exact diagnosis.
Pierre, what do you think about this patient? We asked the audience, you know, what is CMML? And most people think it's kind of somehow a mix. I mean, I'm not just talking about classification systems now, but, you know, what you really conceptualize the disease as. What do you think is going on with this patient, and what about CMML?
Well, I would say that CMML, there's a continuum. I mean, some patients just have MDS with monocytosis, which could be, by the way, without or with an excess of blasts, and others have more proliferative forms. So it's really a continuum, and many patients evolve from one to the other. So it's difficult to classify, and some are really more myelodysplastic, others are more myeloproliferative and can even have extramedullary disease, for which treatment is probably different from the others.
Label or diagnose this patient? Do you think it's compatible with CMML?
I haven't seen the monocytosis exactly. So, I mean, it should be more than 1,000 and more than 10% of the differential to be really considered as CMML. Otherwise, it's in a typical MPD, MPS form. We have the monosomy 7, which I think is sufficient to show us it's a malignant myeloid disorder with a myeloproliferative component, but CMML, you need monocytosis.
Ravi, what do you think is going on with this patient?
No, I agree that I think that the patient probably does have CMML. Sometimes you don't see monocytes called by the morphologist. They call them atypical lymphocytes. I think perhaps this patient had a further workup done at Moffitt, which on flow cytometry and proper histological analysis did show some level of monocytosis, because I agree with Pierre that you need, by definition, 1,000 monocytes, 10%. So,
and if you don't have that, what's the diagnosis?
Well, the thing is that one of the things that is, at least in the pathological literature, a must is the monocytosis. You can have absence of dysplasia sometimes, and then you can call it a CMML even in the absence of dysplasia if it is persistent for 3 months or more and there is no other causes of monocytosis that you can determine.
Dr. Ravandi?
I think in these patients, it's always important to rule out there are some cases of CMML that are associated with PDGFR, alpha and beta abnormalities, and they respond to tyrosine kinase inhibitors. It's very important to look for that, and also it's important to look for cases of P230, BCR-ABL positive, which don't have this cytogenetic abnormality. It can happen. So it's very important to very carefully look at the cytogenetic and molecular lesions in these patients.
Doug, what do we know about secondary MDS after radiopharmaceuticals? I'm not sure how many people live, 15, 20 years. Do we have any data on that?
I'm not specifically aware. I think that's something that's been on our minds, and certainly there are cases and reports of this. It doesn't come straight away. Chemotherapy, we draw that link very strongly. It's a little bit less so with radiopharmaceuticals. Pierre, any comments from that?
Well, I've got another case after an endocrine tumor treated that way. So, I mean, there are some cases. They're rare, but there are some. Yeah.
Pierre, how do you approach the younger, otherwise healthy patient with CMML?
I would say that transplant is certainly the ultimate goal, but it's been published, and it was our experience, that intensive chemotherapy works particularly poorly in CMML, as opposed, for instance, to RayB2, of course, RayBT, which is now AML. Well, it has to be first seen if you should transplant up front or do something before, but if I did something before, it would be a hypomethylating agent, especially in the case of CMML, and especially in the case of monosomy 7, in which hypomethylating agent work pretty well, especially when it's isolated. So I would really favor a hypomethylating agent prior to transplant here.
Doug, another question that the doc wanted to see you all address is the issue of repeat bone marrow examinations. In this patient, you can see the patient's doing well. At what point do you repeat the bone marrow?
It's not known. There's no standard out there. Many of us, if we're treating them with a hypomethylating agent, we will get them through a series of 4 or 6 or 8 cycles. And then the question becomes, if you think it's working and their counts are stable, a lot of folks are not doing. If there's problems with cytopenias, problems with your concern that it's not working, that tends to be the time that our trigger's pulled for repeating a bone marrow. But if we're really planning to continue the therapy, then there's not a specific amount of time that we've been recommending marrows. The question comes up, if you're taking a transplant, then we're talking typically of 4 or 6 cycles of therapy while you're lining up a transplant. If you have a very nice response, the thought is maybe you should move to a transplant at that point and try to take advantage of that better bone marrow function. But again, those data, there's no good studies for those types of data